Hello and welcome to G.L. Horton's Stage Page Podcast. I had planned to take some time off for the holidays, but did not plan on catching a cold in early January, one that had me announcing the performance at a show in a lovely basso profundo. I'm almost better. Can't say as much for G.L. Today we have a recording from Thanksgiving of a conversation G.L. had with Larry Stark of the Theater Mirror website about local theater. I follow that with one of GL's monologues set in Revolutionary War times. You may have forgotten that they had tea partiers back then, folks with little sense of humor, and a strong, if ill-informed, belief system. It is important to remember, always, that we must treat others as we would have them treat us. That golden rule is featured in many belief systems, including the teachings of Christ. Here is GL with Larry Stark discussing local theater.
I'm here with Larry Stark. It's Thanksgiving and about to be the first day of the last month of the year coming up.
Yes.
And I'd like to have his considered opinion on what's going on in Boston Theater these days. Larry told me earlier tonight that he has seen 200 shows in the first 11 months of this year.
That's if you count all the readings. Actually, I have seen plays that were that ran long enough to be reviewed only 183 times so far. But I will probably crack 200 by the end of the year. I've also seen readings, which I don't count.
Well, readings do count, I think. I wish readings did count, and for a while I had this brilliant idea that I was going to have a blog that would be devoted just to readings.
Very good idea.
In which I would not say anything that could possibly kill something, because you expect that play that's put up for a reading is a play that's still in process, and they need to know what works, and then they need to go home and figure out how to get more of that and less of whatever it is that is keeping it from being as moving, exciting, relevant, artistic, or whatever they're measuring it.
Yeah. However, you introduced this with what I perceive as a subtext when you said, in an age when economically the country and certainly the city are in difficulties, theater is in trouble. That may be true, but I think the kind of theater that is in trouble is big, expensive theater. Because in the last couple of years, every single year, we've had more theaters open than close.
Aha. Uh-huh. And some of them I don't even know about.
Because
the papers are not telling us about these things.
Damn right.
And unless you get out and hear what the community is gossiping about, or you happen to have network connections with some of the people who are starting these theaters.
There are places where small theaters work. The Factory, for the next year, has no more slots that you can get. The only way you can get a show at the Factory is if someone dies before they open.
I see.
So the Factory seats 50, but people are using it. My rule of thumb is that there's an awful lot of people who want to do theater, and none of them are making any money, and they don't care.
And, of course, the question is, how long can you do that? And is the length of time that you can do that a length of time in which you can come into some kind of artistic maturity? Now, the average length of a theater company, lifetime, you know, the average length of American marriage is 7 years. Well, that's exactly the average length of a theater company's existence. And they say, well, if it's a successful arc from beginning to end, it peaks somewhere around year four. And by year five and six, they've begun hiring away all the more attractive or commercially valuable people. And they continue to run on their reputation for a little while, and then they have to give up and start another
one. But on this level, again, you're probably talking about larger theater with bigger incomes.
No, I'm talking, well, the average includes everybody. Theaters that start out big and fail quickly.
Because just off the top of my head, Speakeasy's still in business.
Yes.
Company One is 11 years old this year.
Sagan lasted 14.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
It became too expensive to maintain the quality that at a level that was interesting to the people who were pouring all their resources into it.
Yes. It's also true, unfortunately, that they appealed specifically to a smaller audience than they should have, because they committed themselves to being an Irish operation in Boston, which is fine, except that you've exhausted the audience.
Well, not really, because as you noticed, about half the successful plays in Boston or almost any other city in the country are in fact English plays, even if they're written by American writers who had to go to England to make them English plays, because the English have an R&D system for bringing playwrights and directors and so forth.
Whenever you narrow down what you're doing to a specific kind of thing, you run across that problem. You exhaust either the material or the audience, the interest in the audience. And I think that's what happened to Sagan.
Oh, I don't.
They couldn't make a great deal of money doing things that had excellent Irish accent because you couldn't understand what they were saying. unless you're Irish to start with.
Oh, I find that hard to believe, because many of the plays that they did have been done successfully with the same accents by other theater companies once they discovered that they weren't as hard to do as they thought perhaps
they
will.
There's another problem.
But I think the problem is that the sorts of plays that they wanted to do were not small enough cast, so that once they had made commitments to go equity, it was just not economically viable.
Yes.
There aren't enough people to fill the seats to pay as many people as they needed to pay to do the plays they wanted to do if they were doing it professionally. Most of the theaters that premiered those plays in Ireland are not what would be considered in this country professional theaters.
Right.
They're theaters that have a few people who are paid and the rest of the people act for love, because it's a small country and it doesn't really have a full-scale professional theater.
Now we're getting into the problem of equity in Boston, which is a real problem if you want to talk about it.
I'm kind of ignorant of this, having never managed to get myself in a position where I was either able to or forced to become equity. My ideal was always to act in new plays by fellow playwrights, and once you get equity, your ability to do that is considerably limited.
That's right. Oh, restricted.
On the other hand, if you want to play with the big guys, if you want to have people who are really, really fine filling all the roles in the play that you happen to be in, it's really a good idea to be equity.
But then you have to do things
that have a popular commercial base so that somebody brings in the money to the box office so that they can pay those people.
You also have to rehearse differently.
Yep, you have limited rehearsals. You can't spend 6 months doing some rehearsals every week.
You have to rehearse in the daylight.
You have to rehearse in the daylight so that limits the kind of day jobs you can have.
Exactly.
And you probably will make most of your actual money doing commercials, because that's what you can do.
Sure.
Working around a schedule that calls for you to rehearse, to be working 3 weeks like a daylight person, and then doing a six-week run like a nighttime person.
Well, I've known a number of people who have decided not to be equity actors here in Boston. I also know several people who became equity specifically in order to be able to work in New York as well.
Mm-hmm.
Either one works, but each one has its drawbacks and its negativisms. And unfortunately, if you get cast in enough equity plays, you are then forced to become equity in order to continue doing plays at all.
Yes.
Which bothers me very much. The other problem I have with equity is that it doesn't have, specifically in Boston, where there's an awful lot of acting talent, and some of it is very good, whether it's professional or not. If you're an equity actor and you are living in Boston and trying to work in Boston, and you have not been cast in anything for 1 year, you're going to get rusty. You're going to get stale. You're going to have difficulty learning how to act or to continue acting. I think that if that's true, an equity actor ought to be allowed to take a job for no money just to be on stage and do the work, because if they don't, they're gonna get rusted.
Well, there's ways around this. I mean, there are actors who are connected to theaters that they are like on the board of, and they sometimes make contributions to that theater, so that although the theater pays them. Now, that's not the commonest thing, but it has been known to happen. In Los Angeles, there are actors who are paid members of theaters that are organized as if they were schools. And so what they're doing is they're mounting productions, which are student productions, but the students are actually SAG actors who want to do theater in front of an audience rather than just taking classes. So they get to act, but they're actually paying to act rather than being paid. And there are 100 of that sort of theaters in the Los Angeles area. I've been told. I haven't actually seen it with my own eyes.
We're getting up there. Every year, four or five more theaters come here, and most of them are still in business. The smaller companies I go to, there's a lot of good work being done. It's being done in small houses, and that's another problem we get to. The bigger the house, the more chops you need.
You have to be able not just to act, but to be able to act that somebody who's 60 feet away from you can
a little farther. Yes, even going from the factory, which seats 50, to the Durrell Theater, the YMCA Family Theater in Cambridge, you have to project a little harder.
Well, that's
if you go to the other end of Central Square, you get to the new Central Square Theater. That's a big black box. They can do it anyway, but they're not going to have audience anywhere near as close to you as they are at the factory. You got to get to the mall, and you've got to be able to do the projection. And if you work your way up, you work with Speakeasy. Speakeasy works in a big house. It's a proscenium house. You get to stand on stage and talk directly to them, and the apron of the stage is pretty close to the audience. That is true of the new theater.
Yeah, but Speakeasy often does, although they do realistic non-mic'd pieces, they also do a lot of musical theater that is written specifically for amplified voice, and they have their little microphones that they stick on their ears.
Yeah.
So they aren't projecting, but they are.
Not,
they do have to learn how to play.
Not very
using
many
that
straight
microphone.
Plays are amplified yet. And I hope
not
that continues.
Not that we know.
But you're talking about the same thing. You go up and up and up. I don't know very many people who have been asked to go from being a non-equity actor of some consequence in Boston to working at the Huntington. Huntington is a big house. It has not only it has a big house, but it also has a balcony. You need bigger chops. Unfortunately, that's a barrier to most of the people who are good actors here in Boston.
Well, we know several people.
They just don't get cast. They don't get the opportunity to find out that they're not good enough, for instance, to fill a house with their own voice.
Well, we know one example, Robert Bonato, who is a composer, playwright, painter, and actor.
Yes.
And he has been, he's non-equity, and he has been cast at the Huntington. I don't know whether he can continue to be cast because you can only be a non-equity actor in an equity company a certain number of times. But he's done both understudying
and
at some point you have to. But he can make himself heard. And he can certainly do the gesture that carries clear to the balcony. We sort of find that out at the marathon, which of these actors can fill that house, because the theater does, the Boston Center for the Arts, Calderwood Pavilion complex there does donate one of their larger spaces for the marathon.
Right.
And people who first started doing the marathon 10 years ago in the tiny little Boston Playwrights Theater at BU now are required to fill that stage and play to the... They've got friends in the back row of the balcony. So if they want their friends to hear them, they've got to make themselves heard. And some can, and some, unfortunately, cannot. And unfortunately, there's no real rehearsal there. You do a tech-in space, but you never have a rehearsal when you can find out whether, in fact, you can be heard. You just have to hope, you know, because your director's going to be sitting in, like, the fourth row, not in the back of the balcony.
Because he wants to talk to you.
Yeah, well, and you have to tell the technicians what, you know, lighting changes to make and so forth.
There's another aspect, and that's the important thing about, I think, the marathon in this context, is that you talked about Sugan having difficulties becoming equity. The other problem that Sugan had in fact, an awful lot of theaters in Boston have, is that if you do a new play, nobody comes.
That's right.
You either have to that have... or you have to play 3 weeks so that word of mouth makes you... makes the third week a sellout.
Right, and even that is not enough to pay your rent.
Yes, that's right.
That is a terrible thing, and the only way to get around that is to cultivate an audience that is perfectly happy to go to an interesting but flawed play. And for that, they do not want to pay $60 a ticket.
Exactly.
So, you know, if
I certainly don't.
If the thing is an occasion for meeting new ideas, new faces, seeing new talent, learning where the cutting edge is of certain mm-hmm. aspects of theater, or even if it's a theater that's particularly devoted to expressing the voice of a certain community. People will come out for the experience, and if it isn't a perfect experience, well, they have something to talk about with their friends. The issues that theater mm-hmm. addresses are of intense interest to the people who tend to go to that theater, and the fact that the production did not meet their standards this time does not mean that they're not going to come the next time.
Thank you, GL and Larry. The entire conversation was over an hour and a half long. I'll try to pull another section out for you later. Now we have a monologue GL took from her play, Boston's Brothers in Liberty, a docudrama about the Revolutionary War. I play the part of the narrator and a shopkeeper. This is a short piece, good for showing your acting skills by having you switch voices. I guess I could have done better at that. Here's the monologue. Have you heard the story of one Theophilus Lilly? A very inoffensive man, except for his offense of importation. He protested he ought to be at liberty to buy goods from Britain to sell in his North End shop. He wrote a witty note to the Boston Newsletter. It always seems strange to me that people who contend so much for civil and religious liberty should be so ready to deprive others, should make laws to which I am sure I never gave my consent. I own I'd rather be a slave under one master, for I know who he is and I may perhaps be able to please him. Than a slave to 100 or more, who I don't know where to find, nor what they will expect of me. The whole street filled with angry people. They planted a sign in front of Lily's shop, branding him a traitor, and would suffer no person to enter. The ensuing brawl ended with two rioters shot and wounded, an 11-year-old schoolboy killed, and Lily's defender hung. And there you have it, proof that anyone can read a script. Even if not perfectly. Remember, I'm not an actor. I read from scripts. GL puts these scripts out there so you can find one that speaks to you and perform it in class, in a contest, or at an audition, free of charge. Just tell people where you got it, and you get it at www.stagepage.info. Follow the links, free for students and actors. This production is the creation and property of David Meyer in association with G.L. Horton and the www.stagepage.info website. It may be redistributed in whole or in part only with credit given and notice sent to davidmeyer@me.com. Our music is from the Free Play Music Library, license granted through Apple's .Mac program.